Hey, America, it's your girl Shannon King from Peace of Heart LLC. Y'all check out my podcast, A Heartfelt Story, on Pion Media. Unlock your gifts. The cemetery is full of rich ideas. Hello, America. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm Shannon King with A Heartfelt Story podcast through Pion Media. I'm here today to introduce to you guys someone that is really dear to me and has helped me years ago with pursuing my career and things that I'm doing with Peace of Heart. This man does not know how special he is to me, and you probably heard it today. So I want to introduce you all to Mr. Kenneth Gidnack. Welcome, welcome, welcome to A Heartfelt Story.
Thank you.
So I wanted to let you guys know a little bit about A Heartfelt Story. I named it A Heartfelt Story because, you know, a heart is real dear to us. And today, what I want to do is give flowers to those people who are in Milwaukee who are doing some serious things, but we don't really hear them. I mean, we don't really hear about them. So what I want to do today and throughout A Heartfelt Story podcast is give people that recognition, give them the light, shine the light on them, give them their flowers and their diamonds while they're here from Milwaukee. So you guys can get to know a little bit more about people that's doing hard things, hard work in Milwaukee. So this is one of them. Just going back, I just want you to tell me a little bit about the back. What street you from? Who raised you? What school did you go through? You know, things about your past.
Okay. Yeah, I can do that. And I'm glad to be here, and thank you for that inviting me.
Yes, right? Definitely.
I have a story, right, and a background like so many others. However, I was able to take my trauma and take my experience and push through, right, and do something different. But I'm from Orlando, Florida. I was actually born in Buffalo, but we moved to Orlando, Florida when I was younger.
Interesting.
So throughout childhood, I was back and forth to Milwaukee, Orlando. And so I've been in Milwaukee for the last 31 years, okay. 32 years.
How long were you in Florida, Orlando?
And so we were back and forth. My mom and dad, they'll try to get back together, and then they'll split up again.
Okay.
And and so in Orlando, I actually went to elementary school there, middle school and high school, as well as Milwaukee. So I do a couple years in Orlando, a couple years in Milwaukee, and then we back to Orlando. But I will say that by us sporadically moving in time, I believe it saved my life, right? And because at times I was getting into things that I couldn't get out of. Right. And so even in Orlando, you know, growing up, friend of mine caught a murder case, and my name was caught up in it. But, you know, gratefully, I'm happy that, you know, that I didn't have anything to do with it and that I was clear. But at that time, we'll move back to Milwaukee. Right. And then so as I plant my heels in it, so to speak, we'll move back. And so that was my experience there. But when I was in Milwaukee, and everywhere I went, I was continued to be like kicked out of school, like getting in a lot of trouble, you know. Okay. Teenager, I was probably the most likely not to succeed. And I ended up graduating from an alternative high school in Milwaukee. I graduated from Shalom.
Okay. Yeah, I'm aware of that school too. Wow, so you're back and forth in Orlando and you're back and forth in Milwaukee all of your childhood years. So some of these things that you're describing that you did, which was some of the rebellious stuff, was it in both Orlando and Milwaukee, or did you see?
Yeah, both in Milwaukee. But I will say, when I came to Milwaukee, it was a different experience for me. Things were a little more real. It was more close up and personal.
Gotcha.
Even though I stayed in the projects in Orlando, when I came to Milwaukee, it was up front and personal. And I'm saying that to say we moved on 4th and Vine when I first got here, and I was, and it was a lot going on. It was a lot of prostitution. It was a lot of hustlers. It was a bar right across the street from our house, and so I was able to look out the window and see like a full view of. It was like a movie to me, and so. I started to know all the players and the prostitutes, and you know, that was out there, and I was only in elementary school, but you know.
You've seen a whole bunch of stuff going on right outside mm-hmm. of your window. Mm-hmm. And wow, how did that like affect you with some of that stuff that you saw, like the fast life? Did that make you kind of want to do some of those things you saw? Or?
Oh, absolutely. I thought I was going to be Iceberg Slim. Like I wanted to
read that book.
Absolutely. It was the men that I idolized. Like I didn't really know, you know, what it took to be a man. Right. And so by us leaving my father and coming to Milwaukee, this was my image of men, what I seen out my window. Right. And so, they were having a lot of money, you know, cars. It was like the fast life. It looked like fun to me, and so you know that was my early goal or dream. I was like, okay, I'm gonna be a pimp, you know, and so that had an influence on my attitude and behavior.
Wow, can you tell me a little bit about being a pimp? I know in Florida, I used to live in Florida, Orlando and Kissimmee, and I saw a sign where they allow people to be prostitutes and you can kind of write it off on your taxes and things like that. Did you know those things happen in Florida too?
Not as much.
Yeah.
Not as what, I knew it was one section or one block that everybody talked about, you know, the trail or whatever. You go down Orange Blossom Trail and you see everything, but.
Yeah, I've been on that trail. Wow, yeah. That's interesting. This is a vivid picture. Everything that you picture, and it's like it's a movie, but it's crazy that it's your life.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about being a pimp.
Well, that didn't come true, but you know, I was attracted to just a fast lifestyle. And so I had some friends in Lambert Park that was close by, you know, 4th and Vine, and started to go to school and, you know, joining gang activity, you know, fighting and just, you know, doing what I was big enough to do, you know.
I understand. A sense of belonging. Interesting. Where did all that you've done led you to where you are today? And you're not even doing any of that Can you tell us a little bit about where you are now and what you're doing? I know you have a substance abuse agency that's doing certifications.
Yeah.
What are you doing now?
Okay, well, throughout that childhood lifestyle, you know, I did pick up hustling and I started selling drugs. I actually went to New York when I was 17 and I stayed in Queens, for Rockaway Queens, wow. Red Fern Projects. I was supposed to go there for 2 weeks and I end up staying a year. I missed my graduation, everything. Still a teenager, but it was real fast paced hustling. And, you know, I had started doing drugs at the age of, I first tried cocaine, I believe I was 13 or 14. Probably smoked weed when I was like 9. And so, I started using drugs, but as I was hustling, you know, I was using drugs. And when I stayed in New York, my drug habit increased. And so just snorting a lot of cocaine and staying up all night, the whole lifestyle. Eventually, I don't know when, I believe it was almost 30, and I started using crack. And so, now I'm 3 kids in, married and using crack. Wonderful. Every day.
Wow.
So, and it took a toll on me and I ended up losing everything, right? My house, I owned my own house when I was 24, walked away from that. And so I ended up losing my house. I had a job. I lost that. I lost my car. And then my wife ended up moving with my mom in her basement. And so we lived in the basement.
She was still there.
She was still there. And so kind of to fast forward, I end up getting clean. Because I don't want to tell, you know, it's a whole story behind it, but, you know, in between those times, but I end up getting clean 2007.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's many, many years.
Yeah. That's really good. 14, going on 15 years.
Is it a different feeling? And it's basically how you feel and then also your actions that you're doing now. Do you see a difference in that being sober?
Oh, absolutely. Man, it, you know, things that I used to do, you know, I don't even think about doing anymore. I did a lot to tear up the community. And so when I got clean, I was like, man, I'm gonna give back to the community. Like, I'm gonna see how I can help the next person, you know, or prevent somebody from living that lifestyle and they don't have to go through the trials and tribulations that I went through, right? While I was using. And so when I was in treatment, and I was getting rid of a lot of this baggage, right? And so I remember crying in treatment, and I was crying almost every day, like in group setting, these is all men. And one of the guys was like, man, can you really take care of yourself? And I'm like, I don't know what he mean. All I know, I'm crying. I'm like, man, I'm soft. I'm sitting here crying every day. But I was releasing a lot of that baggage, you know, dealing with some trauma. And so while I was in there, I started praying for my purpose. Okay. I'm like, God, why am I here? I missed or I beat death several times throughout my life. And people getting shot right next to me, you know. And so I'm like, God, what was my purpose of being left here? And so as I'm praying for my purpose, I end up doing a group. The counselor let me do a group. And the guy's like, oh, that was really good. That was really good. Ken, you should think about being a counselor. And I'm like, okay. And I'm still praying for my purpose. And it was like, okay, it's been revealed to me. And so after that, I just started to focus on becoming a counselor and helping other individuals. End up going back to school and receive my associate's degree.
That's great.
In human services, right? And so that was such a proud moment for me and my mom and family. That was the first time I walked across the stage since sixth grade, right? And so to accomplish that, and my mom, you know, praying all those years, and for her to see that, I'm getting emotional now because that's like, you know.
And when you're talking, it's okay for men to cry.
Absolutely.
And I was just saying, as far as when you're healing, you were crying and crying, it's okay to cry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of men, especially in Milwaukee, they don't cry, and they're so tough with all these issues that you just said you have. And once you cry, you move forward in a different way. So it's okay to cry.
Absolutely.
It's a heartfelt story.
Absolutely. When I'm talking about when I graduated, and then it was not only that I graduated with my associate's degree, but I was on the dean list, and then I won the president's award.
Oh,
right?
You showing out.
Yeah. And so they giving me a standing ovation when they introducing me, and the president saying, like, Ken, I never saw this before. Like, nobody ever got a standing ovation. And then for my mom to see that, right, and she passed, like, 4 months later. So
she saw
that
it.
Was, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
so rest in peace, moms.
Yeah.
She's proud of you.
Yeah, so.
That's awesome.
And after that, 7 months later, I was back in school to get my bachelor's. And so I obtained my bachelor's in human services with emphasis on social work. And
social work.
Then, you know, after I completed that, and I ended up going back and getting my master's in social work. And so, you know, I'm a fully licensed psychotherapist right now.
Okay. Congratulations. I'm proud of you. That's
awesome. Thank
that's
you.
Some good stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's a lot of education and hard work and studying and exams and essays. And you did it.
You know what happened? After I obtained my associate's degree and I had my clinical substance abuse counseling license, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought I could just open up a shop and like start seeing people for substance use disorder and bill Medicaid and, you know, bill their insurance. And they said, no, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, the only way you'll be able to do something like that is to obtain your master's. And so that's what drove me back to get my master's and become a fully licensed therapist.
Say
but,
less. That's yeah. Okay, I'll so, do that.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah. I just want to know what to do, you know, to overcome the obstacles that they put it, that the system put in front of you, right? And so I went on and did that. And but my true passion always been substance use disorder. And so as I treated individuals in the community for substance use disorder, I noticed that a lot of them, or majority, like 90% of them, had mental health issues as well. And so they having, by them having co-occurring disorder, mm-hmm. I was only able to treat them for substance use disorder. And so that was my other motivational factor to go back to school, right? Because I need to treat the whole person. Yeah. And so instead of referring them out, I can treat the whole person. And there's no way that you can treat the substance use disorder and ignore the mental health. And
definitely, because so, the mental health is the reason why the substance abuse going on.
They could go hand in hand, right? Yeah. And maybe I'm using these substances to suppress, right, the mental health issues that I'm going through, mm-hmm. or vice versa, right? And so maybe I need to quiet these voices in my head by using something or substance. And so, yeah, it goes hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And so pretty much, you know, that was my passion. And as you mentioned, so now I can get to your question, right? I opened my own business. So what I noticed is that it was a lot of people or a lot of counselors, substance use disorder counselors, mental health therapists, but they were Caucasian, right? And they didn't really understand the culture or the people that they was dealing with. And so I knew it would be effective to have more people that look like you sitting in these chairs, right, to treat these individuals.
Well, you can relate to.
Because, man, you know, and I say this a lot, people talk about interpreters and having an interpreter for Latino, but then they need an interpreter for African American, for us in the community, right? Because we say different things, we use different ebonics and language, right? And they don't understand. They go, what did you say? Right? And it lose meaning. I might say, you feel me? And they don't understand what I'm talking about, right? Observing that, I did open up my business to help individuals that look like me become substance use disorder counselors. And so it was a big deal. It still is a big deal, because when you look on the state website, the look up accredited programs to provide substance use disorder education, you know, I'm listed with like MATC, WCTC, you know, all the community colleges. And so to see my name on the list to say, okay, this is a minority-owned business that can provide education for individuals to get licensed with the state. And so I'm real proud of that.
And you're just moving mountains, and you're doing this too by yourself with the story that you got. So that's the drive.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And mama's watching. That's awesome. I'm proud of you. And I think there's more to come.
I do that. That's my side business.
That's my side business.
Wow. Coming through the years, I was the director of St. Charles Youth and Family Services. And I would say, and not to bash them, it just didn't fit right. When I opened my own business, this training center, they told me I was not allowed, to work there.
Conflict of interest.
I guess if you want to call it a conflict, I just say I wasn't allowed to have a business and work there. Yeah. And so it was okay. And I moved on and I took a role with the Milwaukee County. I was the director of outpatient programs. First black man to hold that seat.
Wow. Man,
over
that's awesome.
Three mental health clinics with the county. Also over $1 million, you know, multi-million-dollar contracts, and you know, it was great.
That's great.
And so as I was telling my story, like I'm doing today, mm-hmm. People started to recognize and the things that I do in the community, the food drives and.
Yeah, I saw a food drive that you had, community food drive.
Yeah.
And I share those too. I try to come. That's good. You're doing a lot of things in the community, and you're doing it. You're not even trying, like you're doing it. Anything that comes on out of, to your mind, you just like mm-hmm. implement it. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So, but one more thing. So they sought after me, right? When they saw the work I was doing at the county, and so now I'm the CEO of Serenity Inns, which is a substance use disorder residential treatment facility. It's a residential, 12-bed residential facility, and also we have a 18-bed alumni house. And so,
go ahead.
I'm the CEO. I started in December, and so who would ever thought, you know, coming
that's
out
right
the
here
base, right here in Milwaukee,
that's
on
good.
28th and Brown.
28th and Brown.
Yeah, and so we're working on big things there. You know, I'm working on getting us a building built across the street where we can have a behavioral health clinic to go along with the residential treatment
that's
facility.
Nice.
And so
that's nice.
Yeah,
that's really nice. So you're helping our community get these drugs out of our community. So you guys, if y'all interested in working on your mental health, and if you're interested in working on your sobriety, you guys need to contact Mr. Kenneth Genlach. You want to tell them the name of the agency, the
yep.
Behavior Residentials?
Yep. Kate, and so. You can the best way to contact me personally is go to kgsctc.com. That's my website training center. You can actually Google my name and it'll pop up.
Google.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
I was able to create a nice footprint, you know, electronical footprint where people can find me. So
that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I really appreciate what you're doing because I've worked with child welfare over 20 years, and I work with mothers who are, you know, very, very high. I've had cases where parents were very high, especially in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a parent who kind of came in line twice with the same stuff and trying mm-hmm. to buy it over and over because she was that high.
Mm-hmm.
So when we had those cases, we had to send those parents away to residentials, to
mm-hmm.
those AYODA residentials to mm-hmm. basically work on their AYODA, their substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And they will come back better, but I will, basically every time I come, like I cannot tell them it's somewhere in Florida you can come. It's somewhere in Wisconsin you can go and be better because I couldn't vouch for anywhere. So I would send them away where I know they'll be better. But now that I know that you have something that's right here in our community,
Serenity,
like that's
Inns.
Amazing. That's
yeah.
Serenity Inns.
Yeah.
Serenity Inns. That's
yeah.
amazing because it's right here. We don't have to send our people anywhere else.
Right.
So that's good.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. And it's 12 men. And what make the program so special and unique is that right now we run purely off of donations, right? And so and been sustaining. So they've been open since 2004, right? And so the men get a chance to stay up to a year, right? A year to 18 months, and they can leave there with, you know, a bank account, driver's license, a car. And so it's a great program. And I knew about the program prior to being the CEO, and so I always heard good things about the program.
Mm-hmm.
Men coming in as homeless or without anything and leaving, you know, able to sustain and take care of their family. And so it's really great.
Yeah. Is it for men and women?
Or it's for men.
Okay.
It's for men. And so
18 and up?
Yep, 18 and up. Yep. And so that's my goal, to expand that, right? How do we grow and make more programming and having a outpatient clinic there right on 28th and Brown, because we have the land right across the street from the treatment facility. And so that'll be open to anyone in the community to come in and get treatment for substance use disorder or mental health.
That's a very good idea. I'm down. I'm pretty sure you're going to reach all those goals. That's really good. I have a question for you as far as the sobriety. Why is sobriety important to you?
So when I went into recovery, I went in for all the wrong reasons, I would say, right? I went in to kind of prove a point, show people I can come back on the streets, you know? But something happened while I was there that I realized that it was important for me to love myself, right? And so recovery became important to me. It became personal. And when I started working on the inside, you know, things started to flourish on the outside. And so just trying to give my kids a better life. I feel hurt by the things that I showed them early on in life. And so now it's really about my grandkids, you know, making sure that they stable and see something different, right? Because I provided an environment where my kids can look out the window and see what I saw. And I didn't want to continue to perpetuate that. And so,
That's good. That's really good. As far as sobriety, that's dealing with alcohol. Have you drunk alcohol or did you drink liquor over your lifetime at all?
Oh, yeah. I used to. My last name, right, you've been pronouncing it wrong. My last name is Genlack.
Genlack.
Yeah, and I tried to drink every piece of gin, every gin that was on the van. Alcohol was my first love, right?
And so how long you been sober from alcohol?
I've been clean for everything since 2007. No alcohol, no drugs, no nothing, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So, it's a lot going on now with harm reduction, right? Let's reduce your use so you can live. And I'm okay with harm reduction, but for me, it had to be total abstinence. Right, I didn't want nothing to alter my mind or my thinking. And so if the disease of addiction deals with the mind, right, I don't want to alter that to make me think that it's okay for me to do it, right? Or give me that loophole to slide through and say, okay, it's okay to have one. And so I have to stay sharp.
Zero tolerance.
That's right.
Good. Do you have any help along that journey of staying sober? Any sponsors or anybody to support you?
I went to the 12-step. They recently had it on the news. I went to the 12-step club on 41st and Townsend.
That's good.
And so that provided me an outlet because everybody in the world I knew got high, was drinking or doing some kind of substance, right? And so that was the last house on the block that I could go to where nobody was in there getting high. Mm-hmm. Nobody was offering me anything. And so I started going to 12-step meetings and I started running meetings. I started going to church. And so I started doing AODA ministries at my church. Mm-hmm. And so all those things plays a part of who I am today. And I still reach out. I have some strong black men in the community that I reach out because I still through stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's life, day-to-day things. And even in the position I have to deal with different type of, I just have different problems, but I have problems.
Yes. That's good. So you right. have a huge support.
Yes.
That's good. Awesome. Yes. Does your agency offer sponsors too and support for people?
So the program, I wouldn't say promote, but it definitely supports the 12-step. And so all the guys that's in the program, they do have sponsors. They do go to meetings and, you know, we have a wonderful thing there called Fellowship Dinner, right? And so every night of the week, somebody volunteer is either somebody from the church or the community. They volunteer and they bring dinner and have fellowship with the guys that's in the house.
That's nice.
And so they talk and get to know the guys, and it's a great thing. Like that's I love nice. It. Yeah.
That's nice. You're doing some amazing things, and those things that you're doing, and the baby steps move to like big steps, and then they're also changing different people's lives. Everybody who you're touching and everybody who you're helping, like you're changing everybody's lives with their kids and their girlfriends, their mothers, all those different relationships. I really appreciate that. I'm glad that I got this opportunity to like break it down, because I understand where you're coming from, and then I understand why you're doing these things, and then it's great that you're doing it right in the heart of our community, because that's where it's like we're being defeated right now with all these drugs. One issue that I'm having with a lot of the teenagers is the drugs. And these are like drugs like lean and all these other things. How can we work? What advice would you give to like the teens? Because you said all your teens, you kind of went through these things.
Mm-hmm.
What advice can you give to like the youngsters who are doing these things in this pandemic? Like,
well, first of all, I went and talked to some teenagers out of school, but I'll talk more towards their parents and forgiveness, right? Because a lot of our teenagers out in the community, they hurt and they suffering, and some of it is it stems back to their parents that's actively using, right? And so if they can really understand the concept that it's not that they don't love you, it's that they sick, right? And look at it from a health perspective or a medical perspective, you know, that'll help them have some kind of forgiveness, right? That's my hope anyway, to be like, okay, it ain't my mom don't love me, she just sick, right? And if you don't get treated for your illness, right, it's gonna continue to progress. And so, and for the teenagers that's finding that relief in the drug, you know, and sometimes, you know, the temporary relief sounds like a feels like a solution,
mm-hmm.
but it's really not, you know. And so as I see the young generation continue to like smoke weed and, you know, lean Percocets, and you know, I don't think they really understand how highly addictive it is, right? And that it can cause them to go through withdrawals when they don't have it, or mood swings and that type of thing. So really, you know, and I hate to say education, but educating them about what the drugs can actually do,
mm-hmm.
right, and how it can lead to something greater. Even just knowing the symptoms of like, okay, my body is, something is happening with my body when I'm not taking this drug. Like, I need to understand like what's going on with me. And so just educating them about, you know, how addiction can progress, what can happen to you when you go through withdrawals, right? And when you in that state of euphoria, when you don't remember what's going on, how you can take a life and end up, you know, losing your life at the same time. So, you know, people, it's an increase in overdose for people in the Black community,
yeah.
right? Because nobody wanna pay attention. Everybody like, okay, the opioid epidemic. And I get it, because I said the same thing. The opioid epidemic is really geared outside of our community. It's a public health crisis, but we can't ignore it, right?
Yeah.
Because now we're seeing an increase of overdose in our community.
Yes.
So now we no longer can just say, okay, well, and it could be true. And it is true that, yeah, it's more attention on that
mm-hmm.
now because it started affecting the suburbs. But then let us take advantage of some of those funds that's coming down to help out the people in our community,
yeah.
right? And we need to really let them know, like, this is a dangerous drug. And what can happen to you? You know,
mm-hmm. dangerous drug.
I pray for my youth, because sometimes I don't feel as though they really look at longevity, right? Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, we used to ask kids all the time, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Mm-hmm. But now they like, where I see myself at next week,
yeah.
right? And they don't really live for that, you know? And so hope and faith, right? Those my two favorite.
Hope and faith,
because that's what helped me change my life, right? And sometimes we put hope and faith in the wrong thing, right?
Mm.
We hope this drug gonna do what it's supposed to do, and we got faith in it because we using it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so changing that mindset, man, that if I believe that I can do something different, then maybe I'll try. I always say, you know, the kid that that's acting out before the test, before they have to take a test, you know, they really saying, why would I take the test when I know I'm going to fail? There's no hope there.
Right? Truth.
Yeah.
They said, pay attention.
Right. So we need to give some positive affirmations. We need to let them know when they do something great, like this is great, right? The parent, they only talk about when they do something bad, right? Yeah. Let's celebrate our youth that's doing good. Give them some positive affirmations, you know, encourage them. If they have a great day, be like, man, you had a great day. Let's do this tomorrow. Like, man, I see you, you know, you made it to class. I don't care if you failed the test, but you made it to class. Let's see if you can make it tomorrow, you know? And so we need to do more of that uplifting, right? And so we don't uplift enough, and we focus on the negative. I know that you do great work, right? And we can't ignore that, right? And so, you know, and I saw and I witnessed for myself some of the positivity that you instill in youth. And so, you know, I'm grateful for that. And it always takes a collaboration of, like they say, it takes a village to raise a child, right?
And definitely. Thank you. Yeah. I know we sat across the table a few years ago, you called me, and then was at Starbucks, and then you put me on with St. Charles, and I wasn't ready, but I was ready, and I just was able to be myself with them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good thing. Right now, I think the number one problem is drugs right now because of the pandemic. I guess the number one problem is the pandemic, and then the second problem is drugs. Mm-hmm. And I guess, like you just said, also mental health. So the third problem is mental health. So I hope that with this pandemic that all the different services and agencies that we're implementing can still help them. Mm-hmm. So it's good that you're still not giving up. It's still good that you wake up every day for the big reason why, mm-hmm. and you're still doing the best you can to help the people that you can that want the help to become sober.
Right.
So that's really interesting. And I'm glad that you also mentioned the 12-step program, that 12-step place that's on Townsend, because a lot of us drive past this place, y'all, and we kind of judge you. We see people outside and we're like, oh, no, you know. But a lot of us need to be at that place, you know. So it's interesting that you said you went at that place and then you moved forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, and these are places is right here that we see every day, but we don't take advantage of. And then our community is being defeated by these drugs instead of just going to right there on Townsend, going right there on 28th Street.
So, go see a therapist, right? It's nothing wrong with seeing a therapist, right? And you know, I'm gonna reach out, and you mentioned something that's key. Do you have people to reach out to? Absolutely, right? And so, what do I do when I wake up feeling angry? What do I do when I wake up feeling lonely? Like, I'm depressed, and you know, it's a pandemic. I can't see the family. You know, I may have a family member in the hospital, and I can't go see them because of the pandemic. I don't know what to do with these emotions. And so a lot of times, you know, at an early age, we find that we can numb these emotions and it work, right? And so we continue to use that until it don't work anymore.
Temporary.
Yeah, it's a temporary fix. And so maladaptive behaviors, right? We adapt to the behavior by putting a substance in our body, right? Mm. Because, you know, temporary relief, I guess, is better than no relief at all.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other way to that is, you know, go talk to somebody, you can find some relief, right? Go
That's
talk
good.
To a therapist, you can find some relief.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
I be telling my brothers, I say, you know what, if nothing else, just come sit with me for an hour and let me hold that pain for you. And you can pick it back up when you leave out. But just let me give you an hour of relief. Just come sit with me for an hour and let me hold it. I got you.
That's
you know,
deep.
And so I try to push that, you know, to all the men I can to be like, man, let somebody hold that pain for you for an hour because it can get real heavy.
And that, I mean, when you say that, it's like a relief. Do they come?
So I got a lot of guys. My phone rings so much. You know?
I'm like, man, I'm on my way.
Right, right.
That's good. That's a good way that you do things. You're real creative and innovative in a way that you do things, and you do it like no other. Like, there is no other place like yours, you know? So I love that about you. Like, awesome. If you want, is there anything that you want to give us? Anything coming up? Any events? Anything that you want to give the people out there?
Oh, absolutely. And so they just changed the address, but if you follow me on Facebook, Kenneth Jenlack Sr., there's an upcoming food and hygiene giveaway on the 29th of this month. I believe it's on Titonia, but the flyer will be shared, you know, within the next couple of days. So definitely look me up. I would say recently I joined the fraternity Omega Sci-Fi, right? And so again, that just gave me a broader reach for that brotherhood, right? Now I got a whole network of men that's working towards the things that I work towards. And you know, one of my mentors is Kwaku. He's a doctor, psychologist, you know? And so as I went for my master's and become a psychotherapist, I'm like, where the black men at? And so he was one that stuck out to me. And so now we frat brothers. And so I'm happy about that.
That's nice.
But definitely that. Again, reach out to me. It's a form on my website, kgsctc.com. It's a form on there. You fill out the form. I get the email. It actually goes straight to my phone. Also, the office phone number is 414-930-7960. And just reach out. And again, you know, I'm really thinking about starting another men's group. I had a virtual men's group that was going, and it was, I had guys from all over, and we just met virtually for an hour, you know, again, to just.
That's needed.
Yeah.
Yeah, do that. that's nice.
So be looking for that as well, because that's gonna be there. Yeah, and so once I start that back up, I'll be posting in it and get out flyers and I'll let you know, Shannon.
Awesome, I'm on it. And y'all need to follow his Facebook. I mean, it's so positive. I love it. I share it all the time. That's good. Give us something, like something that you go by every day, a quote or a positive affirmation that makes you just get up and go. What's something?
So in our community, we like playing spades, right? So I was writing a paper one time and I ended the paper with this, but I love it because at the end I said, it's not the cards that you dealt, it's how you play the hand. So,
the cards that you dealt is how you play the hand. That's true.
That's right. And so no matter what your past is, right, you can overcome it and do something different. And so that, I'll leave you with that, right? Because the past can be a stepping stone.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah. That's amazing. You're amazing. I'm so happy that I got to see you today. And you guys, check them out. Thank you for coming, Mr. Kenneth.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, Jen Lack, so you got it now. All right.